left. Back on the freeway, we soon left the urban sprawl, and it wasn't long before we saw advertisements for campgrounds and RV parks. Dimitri pulled over at a place called Peaceful Pines. He negotiated with the man working in the office and produced a number of crisp bills. That was another reason we couldn't get a hotel, I realized. Most required credit cards, and Sydney had had all those, in fake names, of course. We were living off cash now. The clerk gave us directions along a gravel road that led to a spot on the opposite end of the campground. The place was busy with vacationing families, but no one paid much attention to us. Dimitri made sure to park as close to a cluster of trees as possible, in order to obscure the car and its plates. Despite my protests, he wouldn't let me help with the tent. He claimed he could do it faster without me, and that I should stay off my feet. I started to argue until he began assembling the tent. My jaw dropped a little as I watched how quickly he put it together. He didn't even need the directions. It had to be some kind of record. The tent was small and sturdy, giving us both room to sit and lie, though he had to hunch just a little when we were sitting. Once inside, I got to see the rest of his purchases. A lot of it was first aid. There was also a flashlight he propped up, a kind of makeshift lamp.
"Let me see the ankle," he ordered.
I stretched out my leg and he pushed my dress's skirt up to my knee, fingers light against my skin. I shivered as a sense of déjà vu swept me. It seemed to be happening to me a lot lately. I thought back to all the times he had helped me with other injuries. We could have been right back in St. Vladimir's gym. He gently tested the ankle's mobility and did a little poking and prodding. His fingers never ceased to amaze me. They could break a man's neck, bandage a wound, and slide sensually across bare skin.
"I don't think it's broken,"
he said at last. He lifted his hands and I noticed how warm I'd been while he touched me.
"Just sprained."
"That kind of thing happens when you keep jumping off roofs," I said. Jokes were my old standby to hide discomfort. "You know, we never practiced that in our training." He smiled and took out bandaging material, wrapping the ankle until it was supported and stabilized. After that, he produced a bag of frozen peas. Dimitri shrugged and rested the bag on my ankle. The coolness instantly made me feel better.
"Easier than buying a full bag of ice."
"You're pretty resourceful, Belikov. What else do you have stashed away?" The rest of the bag's contents turned out to be blankets and some food. I gave him a big grin when I saw he'd gotten me sour cream potato chips and a bar of chocolate. I love that he remembered such little details about me. My smile faded when another problem quickly popped up. "You didn't buy any clothes, did you?"
"Clothes?"
he asked like it was a foreign word. I gestured to my torn dress. "I can't wear this for long. What am I going to do? Make a toga out of a blanket? You're such a guy, never thinking of this stuff."
"I was thinking of injury and survival. Fresh clothing is a luxury, not a necessity."
"Not even your duster?" I asked slyly. Dimitri froze for a moment and then swore. He'd had no need to wear his coat indoors at the Mastranos. Honestly, he didn't need to outside either, and had left it there in the ensuing fight, sheltering me in its warmth. "Don't worry, comrade," I teased. "Plenty more where that came from." He spread blankets over the tent's floor and laid back on them. There was a look of woe on his face that was almost comical. "Raids, bullets, criminals, no problem. A missing duster? Crisis." "We'll get you another one," I said. "You know, once we find Jill, clear my name and save the world."
"Just those things, huh?"
he asked, making both of us laugh. But when I stretched myself out beside him, both our faces sobered. "What are we going to do?" I asked. Tonight's most popular question.
"Sleep,"
he said, clicking off the flashlight.
"Tomorrow we'll get a hold of Abe or Tasha or someone." We'll let them handle it and get to Jill where she needs to be.
I was surprised how small my voice sounded when I spoke. I feel like we failed. I was so happy back there. I thought we'd done the impossible. But it was for nothing. All this work for nothing.
Nothing? He asked in astonishment. What we did? This is huge. You found Lys's sister, another Dragomir. I don't think you still really understand the weight of that. We had almost nothing to go on, yet you pushed forward and made it happen.
And I lost Victor Dashkov. Again.
Well, the thing about him is that he doesn't stay hidden for long. He's one of those people who always has to be in control. He'll have to make a move eventually, and when he does, we'll get him.
The smile returned to my lips, though I knew he couldn't see it. And I thought I was the optimistic one here.
It's contagious, he replied.
Then, to my surprise, his hand found mine in the dark. He laced our fingers together.
You did good, Rosa. Very good. Now sleep.
We touched in no other way, but his hand held all the warmth in the world. This was hardly a perfect moment, like in the library, but our familiar connection and the understanding between us burned brighter than ever, and it felt good. Right. Natural. I didn't want to sleep. I just wanted to stay there and savor being with him. It wasn't cheating, I decided, thinking of Adrian. It was just enjoying this closeness. Still, sleep was essential. We worked out a schedule where each of us took shifts. He would stay awake now while I rested, and I had a feeling if I didn't sleep, he wouldn't either when the shift change came. I closed my eyes, and it wasn't my heart I had to slow down this time. It was my mind, the hamster wheel that went nowhere trying to figure out what to do next. Just get Jill to court. Just get Jill to court. That was all that mattered. We'd contact someone who could reach Jill. Dimitri and I would lie low. Everything would soon fix itself. Thank God. I spun around, not even realizing I'd fallen into a spirit dream. I was back in Sonia's garden with all its sunshine and color, and she sat back in a chair, looking expectant. I was afraid you'd be up all night, watching your back, she continued. I would if I had my choice, I replied, strolling over to her. She wasn't quite whom I'd expected to see in my dreams, but at least I'd made contact with the outside world. I wore the black and white dress here, but unlike reality, it was clean and intact. Dimitri thinks we're in a secure location, though he's awake, of course. Of course. There was a glimmer of amusement in her eyes, but it was brief. Where are you? I asked. Did the guardians put you in holding? They didn't get me, she said smugly. You were their priority, and a little compulsion made sure they didn't see me. I took off. I hated to leave Emily, though. I empathized, but was too excited at Sony's escape. Good news, finally. But you can get Jill to court. You're free. Sonia looked at me as though I'd just spoken French. I can't get to Jill. I frowned. Is she under that much security? Rose, said Sonia. Jill isn't with the Guardians at all. Victor and Robert took her. Chapter 26 She's what? I exclaimed. The dream birds singing in the garden fell silent. With them? Is that why they called the Guardians? Sonia's calmness continued, but she frowned slightly. Victor and Robert didn't call the Guardians. Why would they? Because they wanted to get rid of Dimitri and me? Perhaps, said Sonia. But not while they were still in the house. Victor's as wanted as you are. It was only Robert's magic that got them out. Then who... The answer hit me. I groaned. John and Emily. I should have known it wouldn't be that easy. They were too quick to accept fugitives into their house. I actually think it was just John. Emily really did seem to believe you were innocent, even if she didn't like why you were there. I also suspect she'd worry calling guardians would just draw more attention to Jill's identity. It wouldn't surprise me if John didn't even warn her about calling them. He probably thought he was doing everyone a favor. And instead he lost his stepdaughter, I said. But why would Victor and Robert take her? And how the hell did two old men subdue a teenage girl anyway? Sonia shrugged. They're probably stronger than they seem. Compulsion also likely played a role. And as for why? Hard to say. But Victor wants power and control. Keeping the missing Dragomir with him is a good way to possess that. I slumped against a tree. We'll never get her to court. We just have to find her, said Sonia. Which I should be able to do once she's asleep. More dreamwalking, I said. My hope began to rekindle. You should go to her now. Find out... I've tried. She's not asleep. And I'm willing to bet they're keeping her awake for that very reason so they can put some distance between us. I'll keep trying, though. It wasn't ideal, but was the best we could hope for right now. And Sydney and the Mastranos? Facing a lot of questions. Sonia's face fell. I knew she still felt bad about abandoning her cousin, just as I felt bad about Sydney. I gently touched Sonia's arm. It's okay. They'll be okay. What you did will help Jill. She nodded. How are we going to stay in touch? I can't always wait for you to be asleep. Silence. Excellent point. Maybe we could get a cell phone today. God knows we needed one, and well, why don't you just come to us? Where are you anyway? I wondered if I was making a mistake in inviting her to join us. Dimitri and I had gone to great pains to keep our location secret, and that run-in with the Guardians had already been a bit closer than I would have liked. Aside from the obvious problems, imprisonment, execution, etc., being captured would take us out of the picture for helping Lyssa. Yet, I was pretty sure Sonia was one of our allies, and at this point, she might be our only link to Jill. I'd made a similar gamble in revealing where we were to Victor, and while he had technically helped us, that help had obviously backfired. Nonetheless, I told Sonia the name of our campground and the best directions I could. She said she'd come. I didn't know how she'd manage it, but suspected she was resourceful, and would keep trying to reach Jill. Sonia? I hesitated to speak, knowing I should just let her end the dream. We had important problems, more serious than I was about to ask. Plus, this was personal territory. What did you mean in the car, when I said I'd shared a dream with my boyfriend? He looked surprised. Sonia studied me for a long moment, those blue eyes looking deeper into me than I would have liked. Sometimes she seemed safer in crazy mode. Auras tell a lot, Rose, and I'm very good at reading them, much better than your friends probably are. A spirit dream wraps your own aura in gold, which is how I knew. Your personal aura is unique to you, though it fluctuates with your feelings and soul. When people are in love, it shows. Their auras shine. When you were dreaming, yours was bright. The colors were bright, but not what I expected from a boyfriend. Of course, not every relationship is the same. People are at different stages. I would have brushed it off, except...
Except what?
Except when you're with Dimitri, your aura's like the sun. So is his.
She smiled when I simply stared in stunned silence.
You're surprised by this?
That is, we're over. We used to be together, but after his change, he didn't want me anymore. I moved on.
Where moving on apparently meant holding hands and having close, heated moments.
That's why I'm with Adrian. I'm happy with Adrian.
That last sentence sounded almost defensive. Who was I trying to convince? Her or myself?
Behaviors and feelings rarely line up, she said, sounding very Dimitri Zen-like.
Don't take this the wrong way, but you've got some issues to work out. Great. Therapy from a crazy woman.
Okay, let's suppose there's something to this. I only really gave up on Dimitri a couple weeks ago. It's possible I'm probably still holding onto some feelings.
Possible? I thought about how acutely aware of his physical presence I always was in the car. The carefree harmony in the library. How good it felt to work with him in that way of ours. Both so determined and almost never second-guessing the other. And only hours ago, in the guest room, Sonia had the audacity to laugh.
Possible. After only 2 weeks? Rose, you're wise in so many ways. And so young in others.
I hated being judged by my age, but had no time for temper tantrums.
Okay, whatever. I've still got feelings. But not him. You didn't see him after he was changed. It was horrible. He was depressed. He said he wanted to avoid me at all costs, that he couldn't love anyone again. It wasn't until this escape madness that he even started acting like his old self.
We talked about that, she said, face serious again. About the depression. I understand it. After being Strigoi, doing what we did. You don't feel worthy of life. There's just guilt and darkness and the crushing memories of that evil. She shuddered.
You've acted differently from him. I mean, you look so sad sometimes, but at others, it's like nothing happened. You're already back to your old self, mostly. Why the difference in you two?
Oh, I've still got the guilt, believe me. After Robert changed me.
There was venom when she spoke his name.
Well, I didn't want to leave my house, my bed. I hated myself for what I'd done. I wished I'd been staked to death. Then Dimitri talked to me. He said that guilt was inevitable. The fact that I can feel it proves I'm not Strigoi. But he told me I can't let that stop me from embracing life again. We've been given second chances, he and I. We can't throw them away. He also said it took him a while to realize it, and that he didn't want me to make the same mistakes. He told me to embrace life and its beauty and the people I love before it was too late, even though it'd be difficult. Shaking that Strigoi past, it's like a weight, always pressing on me. He swore he wasn't going to let it control him anymore, which, believe me, sounds noble but is very hard to do. And that he wouldn't let his life be pointless. He'd already lost some things forever, but refused to let go of the rest.
He said all that? I'm not even sure what half of it means.
He told me to embrace life and its beauty and the people I love before it was too late.
Sometimes I don't either. Like I said, it's much easier said than done. Still, I think he has helped me recover more quickly than I would have on my own. I'm grateful. And as for you and your auras...
That small smile returned.
Well, you've got to figure it out. I don't believe in soulmates, not exactly. I think it's ridiculous to think there's only one person out there for us. What if your soulmate lives in Zimbabwe? What if he dies young? I also think two souls becoming one is ridiculous.
You need to hold on to yourself. But I do believe in souls being in sync. Souls that mirror each other. I see that synchronicity in auras. I can see love, too. And I see all of that in his aura and in yours. Only you can choose what to do with that information, if you even believe it.
No pressure, I muttered.
She looked like she was about to end the dream, but then stopped and gave me a piercing look.
One thing to be careful of, Rose. Your auras match, but they aren't identical. Dimitri's is spiked with bits of darkness, left over from his trauma. That darkness fades a little each day. You carry darkness, too. But it's not fading.
I shivered. Lyssa, it's the darkness I'm taking from her, isn't it?
Yes. I don't know much about bonds. But what you're doing, even if it's helping her, is very dangerous. Spirit tears us apart, no question. But in some ways, I think we spirit users are built for it a little better. Not that it's always obvious, she added wryly. But you, no. And if you take too much, I don't know what'll happen. I'm afraid of it building and building. I'm afraid it's just going to take one spark, one catalyst to make it explode inside you.
What happens then? I whispered. She shook her head slowly.
I don't know.
With that, the dream faded. I fell back into dreamless sleep, though my body, as if knowing it was time to take my shift, woke on its own a few hours later. Night's blackness surrounded me once more, and nearby, I could hear Dimitri's even, steady breathing and sense his warmth. Everything I'd just discussed with Sonia came pouring back to me. Too much, too much. I didn't know where to begin processing it. And no, I didn't know if I could believe it, not with what I'd seen in real life. Behaviors and feelings rarely line up. With a deep breath, I forced myself to be a guardian, not an emotionally distraught girl. Your time for sleep, comrade. His voice came to me like light in the darkness, soft and low.
You can get more rest if you need it.
No, I'm fine, I told him. And remember, you're not...
I know. He chuckled. I am not the general.
Oh, Lord, we finished each other's jokes. I do believe in souls that are in sync. Sternly reminding myself that Sony's visit hadn't actually been about my love life. I recounted the rest of the dream to Dimitri, describing John's betrayal and Jill's abduction. Did I do the right thing telling Sonia where we are? Several moments passed before he replied.
Yes, you're right that we need her help, and she can find Jill. The problem is, Victor and Robert have to know that too.
He sighed.
And you're right that I'd better rest up for what's to come.
So, in that efficient way of his, he said no more. Soon his breathing shifted as he fell back into sleep. It was amazing how he could do that with so little effort. Of course, that was something we'd been taught as guardians. Sleep when you can because you don't know when you'll be able to again. It was a trick I'd never picked up. Staring into the darkness, I kept my senses sharp, listening for any sounds that might indicate danger. I might not have a talent for falling asleep instantly, but I could keep my waking body alert while still checking in with Lyssa. Jill and our escape had occupied me today, but events at court still weighed heavily on me. Someone had tried to kill Lyssa, and a group of guardians had just dragged off Eddie. When I looked through her eyes, it was no surprise that I found most of my friends together. They were in a stark, intimidating room similar to the one she'd been questioned in about my escape, except it was larger. And with good reason. It was packed with all sorts of people. Adrian and Christian stood by Lyssa,
and I needed no aura reading to know the two guys were as uneasy as she was. Han stood behind a table, hands pressed on it as he leaned forward and glared at everyone. Opposite Lissa, against the far wall, Eddie sat stone-faced in a chair with a guardian on either side of him. Both of his guards were tense, braced to leap into action. They thought Eddie was a threat, I realized, which was ridiculous. Yet Han seemed to share their opinion. He jabbed his finger at a photograph lying on the table. Taking a step forward, Lissa saw that the picture was of the guy who'd attacked her, a picture taken after his death. His eyes were closed, his skin gone pale, but it provided a detailed look at his facial features, bland as they were.
"You killed a Maroi!"
exclaimed Hans. I'd apparently tuned into the middle of the conversation.
"How is that not a problem? You're trained to protect them."
"I did," said Eddie. He was so calm, so serious that the part of me that could still muster a sense of humor thought he was like Dimitri Jr.
"I protected her. What difference does it make if the threat's Maroi or Strigoi?" "We have no proof of any of the details of this attack,"
growled Hans.
"You have three witnesses,"
snapped Christian.
"Are you saying our reports are worthless?" "I'm saying you're his friends, which makes your reports questionable. I would have liked to have had a guardian around to verify this."
Now Lissa's temper flared.
"You did! Eddie was there!"
"And there was no way you could have protected her without killing him?"
asked Hans. Eddie didn't answer, and I knew he was seriously considering the question, wondering if he might truly have made a mistake. At last, he shook his head.
"If I hadn't killed him, he would have killed me."
Hans sighed, his eyes weary. It was easy for me to be angry at him right now, and I had to remind myself he was just doing his job. He held up the picture.
"And none of you have ever seen this man?"
Lissa studied the face once more, repressing a shiver. No, she hadn't recognized him during the attack and didn't recognize him now. There was really nothing remarkable about him, no notable feature you could point out. Our other friends shook their heads, but Lissa felt herself frowning.
"Yes?"
asked Hans, immediately jumping on that subtle shift.
"I don't know him," she said slowly.
The conversation with Joe the janitor popped into her mind.
"What'd the guy look like?"
she'd asked Joe.
"Plain, ordinary, except the hand."
Lissa stared at the picture a moment longer, which just barely showed a scarred hand with a couple of bent fingers. I had also noticed it in the fight. She lifted her eyes to Hans.
"I don't know him," she repeated. "But I think I know someone who does. There's a janitor. Well, a former janitor. The one who testified about Rose. I think he's seen this guy before. They have an interesting business relationship. Mikhail was going to make sure he didn't leave court."
Adrian did not look happy at all about having Joe brought up, seeing as it implicated his mother for bribery.
"They'll have a hard time making him talk."
Hans narrowed his eyes.
"Oh, if he knows something, we'll make him talk."
He gave a sharp nod toward the door, and one of the guardians by Eddie moved toward it.
"Find this guy and send in our guests."
The guardian nodded and left the room.
"What guests?" asked Lissa.
"Well," said Hans, "it's funny you mention Hathaway, because we just had a sighting of her."
Lissa stiffened, panic flashing through her.
"They found Rose? But how?"
Abe had assured her I was safe in that town in West Virginia.
"She and Belikov were spotted outside of Detroit, where they kidnapped a girl."
"They'd never..."
Lissa stopped.
"Did you say Detroit?"
It was with great restraint that she didn't shoot questioning looks at Christian and Adrian. Hans nodded, and although he gave the appearance of just passing on information, I knew he was watching for some sort of telling reaction from my friends.
They had a few other people with them. Some of them got away. But we caught one. Who did they kidnap?
Asked Christian. His astonishment wasn't faked either. He too had thought we were safely stashed.
Mastrano, said Hans. Something Mastrano.
Jill Mastrano? Exclaimed Lissa.
Jailbait?
Asked Adrian. Hans clearly wasn't up to date on this nickname, but didn't have a chance to question it because just then, the door opened. Three guardians entered, and with them was... Sydney. Chapter 27. I would have gaped if I were there, both from the shock of seeing Sydney and at the sight of a human on court grounds. Humans, actually, because there were two others with her, a man and a woman. The man was young, only a little older than Sydney, with deep brown hair and eyes. The woman was older and wore the tough, seasoned look I associated with Alberta. This woman was dark-skinned, but I could still see the golden tattoo she and the other humans had. All alchemists. And it was obvious these alchemists were not happy. That older woman was putting on a good show, but her darting eyes made it clear she wanted to be somewhere, anywhere else. Sydney and the guy didn't hide their fear at all. Sydney might have gotten used to me and Dimitri, but she and her associates had just walked into a den of evil, as far as they were probably concerned. The alchemists weren't alone in their discomfort. As soon as they'd entered, the guardians no longer regarded Eddie as the room's threat. Their eyes were all on the humans, scrutinizing them as though they were Strigoi. My friend seemed more curious than afraid. Lissa and I had lived among humans, but Christian and Adrian had had very little exposure, other than feeders. Seeing the alchemists on our turf added an extra element of intrigue. I was certainly astonished to see Sydney there so quickly. Or was it quickly? Hours had passed since we'd escaped Jill's house. Not enough time to drive to court, but certainly enough to fly. Sydney hadn't changed clothes since I'd last seen her, and there were shadows under her eyes. I had a feeling she'd been grilled to no end since her capture. The mystery was, why bring the alchemists here to the meeting about Eddie killing the unknown Maroi? There were two completely different issues at stake. Lissa was thinking the same thing. Who are these guys? She asked, although she had a pretty good idea who Sydney was. She'd heard enough description from me. Sydney gave Lissa a once-over, and I suspected she had guessed Lissa's identity as well.
Alchemists, said Hans gruffly. You know what that means?
Lissa and my friends nodded. What do they have to do with Eddie and that guy who attacked me? She asked.
Maybe something, maybe nothing, Hans shrugged. But I know there's something strange going on. Something you're all involved in, and I need to figure out what. She,
Hans pointed at Sydney,
was with Hathaway in Detroit. And I still have trouble believing none of you know anything about it.
Adrian crossed his arms and leaned against the wall. The perfect picture of indifference.
Keep believing that, but I don't know any of these people. Don't alchemists hate us? Why are they here?
Adrian, ironically, was the only one of my friends who knew I hadn't been in West Virginia. But you'd never tell from his demeanor.
Because we have an escaped murderess to deal with and needed to question her accomplice in person,
was Hans's crisp response. A denial of my guilt was on Lissa's lips, but the older alchemist jumped in first.
You have no proof that Miss Sage was an accomplice to your criminal, and I still think it's ridiculous that you wouldn't let us do our own questioning and leave it at that.
In any other situation, we would, Miss Stanton,
replied Hans. Ice was forming between the two of them.
But this one, as you can imagine,
is a bit more serious than most. Our queen was murdered.
Tension ramped up even more between the Guardians and the Alchemists. Their working relationship was not a happy one, I realized. It also occurred to me that even if Sydney's superiors thought she'd committed some crime, they would never admit as much to my people, which meant Hans's paranoia wasn't entirely unfounded. When none of the Alchemists responded, Hans seemed to read this as approval to begin interrogating Sydney.
Do you know these three?
He gestured to my friends, and Sydney shook her head.
Ever communicated with them?
No. He paused as though hoping she'd change her answer. She didn't.
Then how did you get involved with Hathaway?
She studied him intently, fear in her brown eyes. I wasn't sure if it was because of him exactly. Really, she had a lot of things to be nervous about right now. Like being here at all and the eventual punishment the Alchemists would dole out. Then, of course, there was Abe. Technically, he was the reason she had gotten ensnared in this mess. All she had to do was tell on him, say he'd blackmailed her. It'd get her off the hook, but incur his wrath. Sydney swallowed and forced a defiant look.
I met Rose in Siberia.
Yes, yes, said Hans. But how did you end up helping her escape here?
I had nothing to do with her escaping this place, said Sydney.
It was a half-truth, I supposed. She contacted me a few days ago and asked for help to get to a house near Detroit. She claimed she was innocent and that this would help prove it.
The Alchemists knew by then she was a fugitive,
pointed out Hans.
Everyone had orders to look out for her. You could have turned her in.
When I first met Rose, she didn't seem like the murdering type. I mean, aside from killing Strigoi, which isn't murder at all, really.
Sydney threw in a little alchemist disdain. It was a nice touch.
So when she said she was innocent and could prove it, I decided to help her. I gave her a ride.
We already asked her about this, Stanton said irritably. And we already told you that we did. What she did was foolish, a naive lapse in judgment. It's something for us to deal with, not you. You worry about your murdering fiend.
Her words were light, like they were going to take Sydney home and chastise a naughty child. I doubted it would be that simple.
Who were the people with her?
Asked Hans, ignoring Stanton. Sydney's contempt grew.
One was that guy, Dmitri Belikov. The one you think was cured. I don't know who the others were. Two guys and a woman. They never introduced us.
It was a well-done lie, her faked disgust about Dmitri masking her knowledge of the rest of our associates. Lissa leaned forward eagerly, speaking just before Hans could.
What was in Detroit? How was Rose going to clear herself, especially with Jill?
Hans didn't look happy about the interruption, but I knew he had to be curious about Jill and Detroit as well. He said nothing, perhaps hoping someone might slip and reveal a key piece of knowledge. Sydney, however, continued playing distant and cold.
I have no idea. That Jill girl didn't seem to know either. Rose just said we had to get to her, so I helped her.
Blindly?
Asked Hans.
You really expect me to believe that you just trusted her like that?
She's my...
Sydney bit her lip on what I suspected was friend. She turned her professional mode back on.
There was something believable about her, and I figured it'd be a waste of resources if the Alchemists had been helping you hunt the wrong murderer. If I decided she was guilty, I could always turn her in. And I thought if I was the one who solved this, I'd get the credit and a promotion.
That was a good, good lie. An ambitious girl trying to improve her career on the sly? Very good. Well, not to everyone. Hans shook his head.
I don't believe any of you.
The guy alchemist took a step forward that made every guardian tense to jump him.
If she says that's the way it happened, then that's the way it happened.
He had the same fierceness and mistrust that Stanton had, but there seemed to be more. a sort of protectiveness towards Sydney that was as personal as professional. Lissa picked up on it, too.
Easy, Ian,
said Stanton, still keeping her eyes on Hans. Her composure reminded me more and more of Alberta. She couldn't be at ease with a room full of guardians, but wasn't showing it.
It doesn't matter if you believe her or not. The point remains. Miss Sage answered your questions. We're finished.
Do Jill's parents know anything? Asked Lissa. She was still in shock at all of these developments, not to mention worried about me being out of my safe mountain town. But this mysterious shot at clearing my name was powerful. She couldn't let it go. Sydney turned to Lissa, and I could practically read the alchemist's thoughts. She knew how close Lissa and I were, and would have liked to give Lissa some sort of comfort. There was no way, though, that Sydney could do that with these people in the room. She also had to be aware of the fact that I myself hadn't told Lissa anything about Jill.
No, said Sydney. We just went there, and Rose said Jill had to come with her. The Mastranos don't know why. And then Rose did take her. Or Jill went with her. I'm not sure what happened. It all turned to chaos.
Neither the alchemists nor guardians disputed me taking Jill, which made me think it was a story they'd gotten, and accepted, from both Jill's parents and Sydney. It had just enough truth to be plausible, and explain Jill's disappearance. It didn't mention the Dragomir secret, however, which Emily was probably more than happy to keep quiet for now.
There, said Stanton. This is exactly what we told you before. We need to leave now.
She turned toward the door, but guardians blocked the way.
Impossible, said Hans. This is a serious matter, and Miss Sage is the only link we have to a murder. A royal murder. And a kidnapping.
Stanton scoffed, and I remembered Sydney once saying the alchemists thought the Moroi royalty system was silly.
She doesn't seem to be of much more use to you. But don't worry, we'll be holding her. Contact us if you have more questions.
Unacceptable, said Hans. She stays here.
Ian, the other alchemist, joined the argument, moving protectively in front of Sydney.
We're not leaving one of our own here.
Again, I had that funny feeling about him. A crush, that was it. He had a crush on her and was treating this as more than just business. Stanton gave him a look that said she would handle this matter. He fell silent.
You can all stay here then, said Hans. Makes no difference to me. We'll get you rooms.
That is unacceptable.
From there, she and Hans got into a raging argument. I didn't think it would come to blows, but the other guardians had closed in slightly as a precaution. Ian's eyes darted between Stanton and Sydney, but he didn't get into the fray. Once his gaze passed over the table Hans leaned against, and Ian suddenly did a double take at the photograph. It was only a brief pause, a slight widening of the eyes, but Lissa caught it. She took a step toward Ian and Sydney. One of the guardians glanced at the movement, deemed Lissa safe, and returned to watching Stanton.
You know him,
Lissa murmured, keeping her voice below the shouts. In fact, it was a little too low because she got blank looks from Sydney and Ian. Their ears couldn't hear what a Moroi or Dampier could have. Lissa glanced uneasily around, not wanting to attract attention. She raised her volume slightly.
You know him. The guy in the picture?
Ian stared at Lissa, a bit of wonder and wariness on his face. He undoubtedly bore that same standoffish attitude toward vampires, but her words had caught him off guard. And even if she was an evil creature of the night, she was a very pretty one.
Ian, said Sydney softly, what is it?
There was a note of urging in her voice, one that inadvertently played upon his crush, I think. He opened his mouth to speak, but then the conversation among the others wrapped up. Sydney again became the center of attention, and Ian turned away from Lissa. The compromise Stanton and Hans had reached was exactly that, a compromise. Neither was happy with it. There was a small town less than 45 minutes away from court, and the alchemists would stay there, with several guardians on hand. It sounded like a house arrest to me, and Stanton's expression seemed to agree. I think she only consented because it was a human town. Before he let everyone go, Hans questioned my friends a final time, his eyes studying every face carefully.
And none of you know this alchemist girl or have been in contact with her, or know about her involvement with Hathaway?
Again, Lyssa and the others denied it, and again, Hans had no choice but to grudgingly accept the responses. Everyone moved toward the door, but Hans wouldn't let Eddie leave.
Not you, Castile. You're staying here until other matters are settled.
Lyssa gasped.
What? But he...
Don't worry about it, said Eddie with a small smile. Everything will be okay. Just look after yourself.
Lyssa hesitated, despite Christian tugging her arm to go. Although all accounts said Eddie had defended Lyssa's life, he'd still killed a Maroi. That wouldn't be taken lightly. The guardians had to be 100% convinced he'd had no other choice before they'd release him. Seeing the strong, calm look on his face, Lyssa knew he was prepared to handle whatever came.
Thank you, she said, walking past him. Thank you for saving me.
His answer was a slight nod, and Lyssa stepped into the hallway to find herself in more chaos.
Where are they? I insist on... Ah!
My friends and the alchemists had been heading toward the exit while a group of guardians escorted them. Meanwhile, someone had entered the hall and was now being stopped and challenged by the guardians. It was Abe. He took in every piece of the bizarre scenario in less than a heartbeat, his eyes passing over Sydney and the alchemists as though he'd never seen them before. Through Lyssa's eyes, I saw Sydney blanch, but nobody else noticed. Abe smiled at Lyssa and sidled up to walk out with her.
There you are. They want you for the last monarch test. And they sent you?
Asked Christian skeptically.
Well, I volunteered,
replied Abe.
I'd heard there was some excitement. Murder, fanatical religious humans, interrogations, all things I'm interested in, you know.
Lyssa rolled her eyes but said nothing until the whole group emerged from the building. The alchemists and their unwelcome escort went one way while Lyssa and our friends went the other. Lyssa longed to glance at Sydney and Ian. I did too, but knew it was best to keep moving forward and follow Abe's lead, particularly since some of those guardians were watching more than just the alchemists. As soon as Lyssa's group was far enough away from the authorities, Abe's amiable smile vanished, and he turned on my friends.
What the hell happened? I've heard all sorts of crazy stories. Someone said you were dead.
Nearly,
said Lyssa. She told him about the attack, expressing her fear over Eddie.
He'll be fine,
said Abe dismissively.
They have nothing to hold him on. The worst he'll get is a mark on his record.
Lyssa was relieved by Abe's easy assurance, but I still felt guilty. Thanks to me, Eddie's record was already marred. His sterling reputation was declining on a daily basis.
That was Sydney Sage, said Lyssa. I thought they were all in West Virginia. Why isn't she with Rose?
That, said Abe darkly, is an excellent question.
Because they were apparently kidnapping Jill Mastrano in Detroit,
said Christian.
Which is weird, but not the craziest thing I can think of Rose doing.
I appreciated the support. Abe got a recap of this new development, too, at least as much as my friends knew of it, which was only a fraction of the whole story. Abe picked up immediately that he'd been played, and it was obvious from his angry expression that he didn't like being kept in the dark. Welcome to the club, old man, I thought with small satisfaction. I hadn't forgotten how no one had filled me in on the escape plan.
My smugness was short-lived because I was worried about what would happen to Sydney, now that Abe was onto her.
"That girl was lying to me," he growled. "Every day, all these reports about how quiet and boring it was in West Virginia. I wonder if they even made it to that town. I have to go talk to her."
"Good luck,"
said Adrian, pulling a cigarette out and lighting it. Apparently, in my absence, the dating contract he jokingly made up that said he would cut back on his vices didn't apply.
"I don't think her cronies or the guardians are going to let you near her."
"Oh, I'll get to her," said Abe. "She's got a lot of answers. If she hid them from those other idiots, then good for her. But she's going to tell me."
A sudden thought sparked into Lissa's mind.
"You have to talk to Ian. That guy with the alchemists, he knows the man in the picture. The guy Eddie killed."
"You're certain?" asked Abe.
"Yes,"
said Adrian, surprising them all.
"Ian definitely had a reaction. He's also got a crush on that Sydney girl."
"I saw that too," said Lissa.
"She seems kind of uptight,"
Adrian frowned.
"But maybe their kind go for that."
"That crush might actually be useful," mused Abe. "You women don't know the power you wield. Have you seen that guardian your aunt's dating? Ethan Moore?"
"Yes,"
groaned Christian.
"Don't remind me." "Tasha is pretty hot, though,"
noted Adrian.
"That is not cool," said Christian.
"Don't get so huffy,"
said Abe.
"Ethan's a palace guard. He was there the night of the murder, which could be very useful to us if she can keep him interested."
Christian shook his head.
"Those guards already testified. It won't matter. Ethan's told what he knows."
"I'm not so sure," said Abe. "There are always things that occur off the official record. And I'm positive the guards were all debriefed with strict orders on what to reveal and not to reveal. Your aunt might be charming enough to find out something for us."
Abe sighed, still looking very unhappy at the sudden upsetting of his orderly plans.
"If only Sydney had been charming enough to talk her way out of that interrogation so that I could go interrogate her. Now I've got to break through those alchemists and the guardians to get to her and figure out where Rose is. Oh, and you do actually have to go to your test, Princess."
"I thought that was just a line you used to find me," Lissa said.
"No, they want you."
He gave her directions to the test. It was in the building she'd had the second test in.
"All of you go together and then get the guardian to walk you back. Don't leave your room until Janine or Tad come by."
Tad was one of Abe's henchmen.
"No more surprise attacks."
Lissa wanted to argue that she most certainly wasn't going to put herself under house arrest, but decided it was best to just let Abe go for now. He hurried off, still radiating agitation, and she and the guys turned toward the testing site.
"Boy, is he pissed,"
said Adrian.
"Do you blame him?"
asked Christian.
"He just lost membership in the Evil Mastermind Club. His brilliant plan fell apart. And now his daughter's missing when he thought she was somewhere safe."
Adrian stayed pointedly silent.
"I hope she's okay,"
sighed Lissa, a knot forming in her stomach.
"And what in the world does Jill have to do with any of this?"
Nobody had an answer for that one. When they reached the testing site, Lissa found a situation almost identical to before. Lots of spectators lining the hall. Guardians blocking the door. More people than ever were cheering her name as she approached. Some who were common Moroi and others who were royals whose candidates were out of the running. A number of nominees hadn't passed the fear test, so those families had switched their loyalties. Again, Lissa was ushered into the room alone. Her heart began to pound when she saw the same old woman. Were more terrible images to come?
Lissa couldn't see the chalice, but that was no guarantee of safety. There was no extra chair, so Lissa simply stood in front of the old woman. "Hello," Lissa said respectfully. "It's nice to see you again." The woman grinned, showing those missing teeth.
"I doubt that, but you say it very convincingly. You have politics in your blood."
"Thank you," said Lissa, unsure if she'd been complimented or not. "What would you like me to do for this test?"
"Just listen. That's all. It's an easy one."
A twinkle in the woman's eye made Lissa think this would not be easy.
"All you have to do is answer a question for me. Answer correctly, and you're through to the vote. And won't that be entertaining?"
The old woman seemed to say those last words more to herself than Lissa.
"Okay," said Lissa uneasily. "I'm ready."
The woman sized Lissa up and seemed to like what she saw.
"Here it is, then. What must a queen possess in order to truly rule her people?"
Lissa's mind went blank for a moment, and then a jumble of words popped into her head. Integrity? Wisdom? Sanity?
No, don't answer," said the old woman, watching Lissa carefully. "Not yet. You have until tomorrow, at this same time, to think about it. Come back with the right answer, and you'll have passed the trials. And," she winked, "it goes without saying you won't talk to anyone about this."
Lissa nodded, rubbing the small tattooed spot on her arm. She'd get no help with the answer from anyone else. Lissa left the room, turning the question over and over in her mind. There were too many answers to a question like that, she thought. Any of them could... Movement in my reality instantly snapped me out of her head. I half expected Sonia to come bursting into our tent, but no, that wasn't what had caught my attention. It was a much smaller motion, and something infinitely more powerful. Dimitri was in my arms. Chapter 28. I stopped breathing. We'd each had our own blankets, but even in the middle of summer, the temperature had dropped during the night. Dimitri, in his sleep, had rolled over against me, merging our blankets into one pile and resting his head on my chest. His body lay against mine, warm and familiar, and he even snuggled a little closer. He was more exhausted than I'd realized if he was doing this in his sleep. After all, this was the guy who slept with one eye open. But his guard was down now, his body unconsciously seeking... what? Simple warmth? Me? Damn it! Why had I asked Sonia my question? Why couldn't I keep going with my easy role as Adrian's girlfriend and Dimitri's friend? Because honestly, I wasn't doing a very good job at either one right now. Tentatively, fearfully, I shifted slightly so that I could put one arm around Dimitri and draw him closer. I knew it was a risk, one that might wake him and break this spell. But it didn't. If anything, he seemed to relax more. Feeling him like that, holding him, it turned up a swarm of emotions within me. The ache I had felt since his loss burned within me. At the same time, holding him like this also seemed to fill that ache, as though a piece of me that had been missing was now restored. I hadn't even realized that piece was missing. I'd blocked it all out until Sonia's words had shaken my fragile new acceptance of life. I don't know how long I stayed like that with Dimitri. It was long enough that the rising sun began to illuminate the tent's translucent fabric. That was all the light my eyes needed to now see Dimitri, to see the finely carved lines of his face and softness of his hair as he lay against me. I wanted so badly to touch that hair,
to see if it felt like it used to. That was a silly sentiment, of course. His hair wouldn't have changed. Still, the urge was there, and I finally gave in, gently running.